Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Naravatam, Canto 5, Chapter 26, Text 40. This is actually the last verse in this canto. Boo. Budvi pavasha saridadri naba samudra. Patala dinara kabagana loka samsta. Gita maya tava nipad bhutam ashvarasya. Stulam vapu sakala jiva nikaya dhamma. Translation. My dear King, I have now described for you this planet Earth, other planetary systems and their lands, varshas, rivers, and mountains. I've also described the sky, the oceans, the lower planetary systems, the directions, the hellish planetary systems, and the stars. These constitute the Virata Rupa, the gigantic material form of the Lord, on which all living entities repose. Thus I have explained the wonderful expanse of the external body of the Lord. Please repeat. My dear King, I have now this ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, 26th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of the Hellish Planets, completed in the Honolulu Temple of the Panchatattva, June the 5th, 1975. Now there's an additional supplementary note here. Could you read it? Save my voice.
There is a supplementary note written by His Divine Grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, Prabhupada, in his Gaudiya Bhashya. Its translation is as follows. Learned scholars who have full knowledge of all the Vedic scriptures agree that the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are innumerable. These incarnations are classified into two divisions called Prabhava and Vaibhava. According to the scriptures, Prabhava incarnations are also classified into two divisions, those which are called eternal and those which are not vividly described. In this fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in chapters 3 through 6, there is a description of Rishabhadev, but there is not an expanded description of his spiritual activities. Therefore, he is considered to belong to the second group of Prabhava incarnations. In Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 3, verse 13, it is said, Ashtame meru devyam to nabir jata urukrama. Darshanam vartmadaranam sarvashrama namaskritam. Lord Vishnu appeared in the eighth incarnations as the son of Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnidra, and his wife Meru Devi. He showed the path of perfection, the Paramahamsa stage of life, which is worshipped by all the followers of Varnashram Dharma. Rishabhadeva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his body is spiritual Sachidananda Vigraha. Therefore, one might ask how it might be possible that he passed stool and urine. The Gaudiya Vedanta Acharya Baldev Vidyabhushan has replied to this question in his book known as Siddhanta Ratna, first portion, text 65 to 68. Imperfect men call attention to Rishabhadev's passing stool and urine as a subject matter for the study of non-devotees who do not understand the spiritual position of a transcendental body. In the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.11, the illusion and bewildered state of the materialistic of this age is fully described. Elsewhere in the fifth canto 5.5.19, Rishabhadev stated, idam shariram mamadurvibhavyam. This body of mine is inconceivable for materialists. This is also confirmed by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Avajananti mam moda manusham tanumashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. The human form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely difficult to understand. And in fact, for a common man, it is inconceivable. Therefore, Rishabhadev have directly explained that his own body belongs to spiritual platform. This being so, Rishabhadev did not actually pass stool and urine. Even though he superficially seemed to pass stool and urine, that was also transcendental and cannot be imitated by any common man. It is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that the stool and urine of Rishabhadev were full of transcendental fragrance. One may imitate Rishabhadev, but he cannot imitate him passing stool that is fragrant. The activities of Rishabhadev, therefore, do not support the claims of a certain class of men known as Arhat, who sometimes advertise that they are followers of Rishabhadev. How can they be followers of Rishabhadev while they act against the Vedic principles? Sukadeva Goswami has related that after hearing about the characteristics of Lord Rishabhadev, the king of Konka, Venka and Kutaka initiated a system of religious principles known as Arhat. These principles were not in accord with the Vedic principle and therefore they are called Pashanda Dharma. The members of the Arhat community considered Rishabhadev's activities material. However, Rishabhadev is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is on the transcendental platform and no one can compare to him. Rishabhadev personally exhibited the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.8, Dava nalastavanam alelihana sahatena dadaha. At the conclusion of Rishabhadev's pastimes, an entire forest and the Lord's body were burned to ashes in great forest fire. In the same way, Rishabhadev burned people's ignorance to ashes. He exhibited the characteristics of a Paramhamsa in his instructions to his sons. The principles of the Arhat community, however, do not correspond to the teachings of Rishabhadev. Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan remarks that in the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is another description of Rishabhadev, but that Rishabhadev is different from the one described in this canto. End of the 5th canto.
Budvi pavasha sariradri nabasa mudra patala dinara kabaga naloka samsta gita maya tivavana buchamishvarasya stulam vapu sakala jivanakaya dama. My dear king, I have now described for you this planet Earth, other planetary systems, and their lands, vashas, rivers, and mountains. I have also described the sky, the oceans, the lower planetary systems, the directions, the hellish planetary systems, and the stars. These constitute the Virata Rupa, the gigantic material form of the Lord, on which all living entities repose. Thus I have explained the wonderful expanse of the external body of the Lord. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna. So the Srimad Bhagavatam gives us all the information about life on the different planetary systems above and below the earth. This is described particularly in this canto. If you look through all the different religions, there isn't really any other body of knowledge about all of this. What to speak of the activities in the other planets? The activities of the Supreme Lord Himself are not explained in any other scripture than the Vedas. If people argue that the information about Krishna is perhaps, you know, not complete or whatever they want to say, not convincing. But there simply is not any other description anywhere known to humanity about the Supreme Personality of Godhead in such detail as the descriptions of Lord Krishna. Actually, Lord Krishna is so obviously the Supreme Lord just simply on account of the fact that there is no other competing version. There simply is not a competing version. Who else can you find who has such an amazing life, such an amazing story of their life as Krishna? Who can you find? What is competing with that? If you say, well, not Krishna, somebody else. Well, if you've got somebody else, give us a description that compares to Krishna. Nobody can give. It's like, you know, comparing a small flower bush to a banyan tree. There simply is not any other competing description to compare to Krishna. It is so obvious that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's so blatantly obvious, because simply because of the fact that his activities are so superhuman. Even if it was just an invention of the mind, that in itself is superhuman. Even if it was just an invention of somebody's imagination, that imagination is so incredible that it must be God. Who could have such an imagination? If you want to look throughout all the books and all the libraries, can you find anywhere any other description of a personality? Sometimes people like to invent great personalities like Superman or something, and they have some kind of a story that is, you know, he came from another planet and he's got Krypton, and it, you get the stone and it makes... Anyway, he's got a story. But does it compare in any way to the life of Lord Krishna, which is so deep in meaning and rasa? The pastimes of Krishna are so deep in meaning and so ever fresh, and they've been the source of inspiration to so many great sages and saints since time immemorial. Simply, there is not anything else to compete with it. And it is so incredible, so fantastic, that it's just absolutely obvious that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The only reason that people can't see is because they've been put into Krishna's bewildering potency, which is also spiritual energy. Devi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. That material energy which puts us into illusion, by which we cannot see Krishna, that is also Krishna's energy, is also a spiritual energy. Actually, even the material world, with all of its miseries which you've been reading about in the hellish planetary systems and its enjoyments in the heavenly planets, actually, even the material universe is impregnated with Satchit Ananda, bliss. Even there's pleasure in the material world. There's a sort of a blissfulness in this material world. And only by the actions of certain planets, like Shani is particularly famous. Here it's describing about the different planets. It said that the most of all of the planets, the greatest planet is actually Saturn. Because Saturn, all the other planets, they have to wait for Saturn. The planets are moving along and the moon is moving the fastest. The universe is like a clock. If you look inside a clock, you'll see there's many different wheels. Some wheels are moving very fast, and some wheels are moving medium. And then one wheel, like the hour hand, is moving very slowly. So if you take all of the planets, they're all moving according to the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This machine has been put into motion. This incredible machine. And of all of the planets, Saturn is moving very slowly. Therefore, all the other planets, they have to wait for Saturn. Nothing can happen until Saturn catches up. If they all want to do something together, they have to wait for the slowest one. That's why when Krishna and his family, they left from Vrindavan to go to, Goloka, Gokula, to go to Vrindavan in the bullock carts, they had to put the women and the children in front. So the slowest one was not in the back. So that everybody would go along at the pace of the slowest. So this is actually the situation in this material world. Is that really even the material world is blissful? But because of the action of certain planets, like particularly Saturn, Saturn's job is to create misery, obstacles and delays within the material world, so that we can't properly enjoy it. It's like Saturn is like putting a bit of salt in the sweet rice. Even the material world, there's so much enjoyment, but it's mixed with miseries. And Saturn has a portfolio of creating these miseries. Not only Saturn, other planets also are creating miseries. Enemies and friends. So the Bhagavatam explains how this is all working. In the life of a particular individual, the planets take different roles. According to the time that you're born, the planets will get divided into two camps. One side will be your friend and the other side will be your enemy. So one side is trying to spoil your enjoyment. In other words, give you your bad karma, the results of your bad karma. And the other side is trying to give you the results of your good karma, the pleasures and the pains of the material world. So these planets, they have a function. They're demigods. They control our lives in the sense that they control our destiny, our karma. Until we surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead completely, when we come under Krishna's direct supervision, until that time, we're like a prisoner in the prison house. The prisoner in the prison house, he's under the keepers of the jail. But when he comes out, he's back in the kingdom under the government, direct control of the king. But as long as he's in the prison, he's under the control of the jailhouse keepers. And the citizens and the king, they don't see what's happening in the prison. So until we actually surrender to the Supreme Lord, we're under the control of these planetary forces. This is the arrangement by which Krishna has made this system. And even though he can change it at any moment, he doesn't usually interfere with it. Just like we're reading in the purport about Lord Rishabhadev, and was asking about how, if Lord Rishabhadev is Supreme Personality of Godhead directly, how could he be passing urine and stool? So, just like it says, Kila Krita Kamani, that the Supreme Lord, he's playing like an actor in the material world. He plays like an actor. So the Krishna and Balaram, they were like incredible actors on the stage. So in the same way, the Lord, although he could change all the laws of the material world at any moment, he doesn't. He acts according to the system that he's set up. It's just like the Lord himself, when he disappeared, he could have just ordered in a Vaikuntha aeroplane and gone. He didn't have to be shot by an arrow as if like an ordinary human being was killed. Krishna could have just waved his hand and then Garuda would have come, or a Vaikuntha aeroplane would have come, or he could have just flown directly. But in order to play the game of observe the rules of the material world, Krishna is acting his pastimes in accordance with the laws that he's set in motion within this universe. So that even Krishna was afflicted by Saturn. Of course, he didn't have to be, but just to show, when the Shyamantaka jewel incident happened, that was also Krishna experiencing, like they say, sadi sati, or the influence of Saturn. So Krishna got bad reputation. And there was some semblance of suffering. Actually, it wasn't really suffering for Krishna, just like because he used it as an impetus for pastimes. But in any case, Krishna is acting in that way within this material world. The same way Lord Rishabhadev, although they're completely transcendental. So here we find in the Vedic literatures discussions about all the activities within the universe. And some of them are very wonderful. And if you're attracted to those places, you can go there. In fact, you will go there. If you have some desire in your heart to see what, even just to out of curiosity, they say, curiosity killed the cat. Have you heard that saying? It's an English saying. Curiosity killed the cat. The cat is very curious. He wants to see what's happening inside this room, or what's that noise. So even if out of curiosity you'd like to see, just like you see nowadays, there's many movies which are like the hellish planets. They have movies, horror movies. And it's just like the hellish planets. And people, they want to go and see that. They're attracted. They're attracted to wearing chains and whips and, you know, collars and studs. And there's a certain class of people in the West, they wear this kind of clothes. They wear some kind of a collar with a chain, and their girlfriend is carrying them around. And he has a collar with studs, and the girlfriend is carrying, or sometimes their lover is bringing a whip and whipping them. They take pleasure in this, you see. They take this perverted kind of pleasure. And in seeing horrible things on the movies. So when you, in this life, you fill your mind with these kind of things, next life, that's where you're going to go. So in the same way, if you fill your consciousness with the activities of the demigods or even the heavenly planets, if you're attracted, you'll have to go there. It said, actually, when a devotee is going back to Godhead, if a devotee is very pure enough to go back to Godhead, and he's in the flower aeroplane, and he's going back to Godhead, he doesn't just go back to Godhead in an instant. He goes across all the higher planetary systems. And as he's going across, he can look down and he can see what's going on. He can see the activities in the different planets. Now, because Maya doesn't very easily want to give up a devotee. So she's trying one last attempt. So on the way out from the material universe, the devotee, he's offered everything in the universe. Everything he's offered. Everything in the material universe. Everything in these verses. All these descriptions. The rivers, the mountains, the planets, the stars. He's offered even to be the Lord over all those things, finally. Even to take the position of Lord Brahma. What to speak of enjoying all the pleasures in the higher planets. And if the devotee, he wants to enjoy any of those things, even if he's slightly curious, then he has to get down and go there, wait, before he leaves. So, you know, how can you possibly not be attracted or not be interested? What is that power that will overcome that? Now, one of the things that, probably the main thing that you picked up from association with Prabhupada. The association of Prabhupada was a very interesting thing, because Prabhupada, as a representative of all of the demigods, had so many qualities, so many great qualities. You can read books about all the qualities of a pure devotee. And in Prabhupada, all of those qualities were there, so many wonderful qualities. So sometimes, you know, if it's difficult to say, well, what was the most attractive thing, or the main thing that you picked up about Prabhupada? What was the thing that most caught you? You'd have to say it was Prabhupada's mood of preaching. It was Prabhupada's dedication to the mission of his spiritual master. Prabhupada himself was 100% dedicated to the mission that he'd been given, the task that he had been given by his guru. He was so much determined, dedicated to the mission, that everything else took a secondary place. His family life, everything. Even Prabhupada risked so many things, the censure of his godbrothers, the criticism of his godbrothers. Because Prabhupada did things that were considered, it was against Vedic culture. Even for a sannyasi to cross the ocean is against Vedic culture. What to speak of bringing young, unqualified persons, worshipping the deity, initiating as Brahmins, persons who were really not incredibly qualified, like a really pukka Brahmin in India, who's born in a Brahmin family and knows all the rituals and all the mantras. You know, the devotees in the West, Prabhupada was taking a big risk. Many devotees fell down. So Prabhupada was actually risking so much criticism, all to carry out the mission of his guru, and all propelled by one major quality, the quality of mercy, quality of compassion. It is said that actually, of all the qualities, it is a devotee's mercy and compassion which actually qualifies him to associate with the Supreme Lord. It is only this quality, really, that qualifies you in the ultimate sense. No other qualification is really sufficient. No kind of purity, or no kind of following of austerities, or knowing of mantras, or study of the Vedas, is actually ever going to qualify you to associate with the Supreme Lord, other than this one quality of mercy, compassion. So, because of compassion, Prabhupada did so many things that sannyasi doesn't normally do. He married some of his disciples. He initiated yavanas and malechas as Brahmins, trained them up. And though in the beginning they may not have been very qualified, gradually they picked up those qualifications. But keeping what was the main power force that enabled the devotees to not be pulled back by Maya, because Maya is a very powerful force. So the only force which is powerful to overcome Maya is this dedication to the mission. It's the preaching spirit. Because the preaching spirit is the only kind of pleasure that is in this material universe that's not in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world is unlimited pleasure that you can't even imagine. But this one rasa, this preaching rasa, is not present in the spiritual world, because nobody is fallen. Nobody needs saving. In fact, there's no suffering at all. So even the quality of mercy and the quality of the preaching mood is not necessarily needed so much in the spiritual world. So therefore, that is a very special rasa that you can only get in this material universe. But it is such a high quality, and it is such a high rasa, that sometimes great souls, they come down from the spiritual world just to experience this preaching mood. So this is the thing that you picked up from Prabhupada, this dedication to the mission. So if you want to be successful in Krishna consciousness, you have to pick up this preaching mood. This is the movement, the spirit of Lord Chaitanya. This is the meaning of the Sankirtan movement. A dedication to the mission. That's why when we look at all the great souls, you know, there are so many great rishis and sages who are so studied in the Vedas, all the mantras. They know how to perform all the yajnas perfectly. They're so qualified, control of the senses. They never come under the control of anger, lust, or greed. And yet, Arjuna is such a much greater devotee than any of them. Arjuna is such a great devotee than any of them. Why? Because Arjuna did the needful. Arjuna took up the mission that was very important to Krishna. What was that mission? That was saving the earth planet from the demons. Because the material world is always coming. There's a big war going on. Just like I said, in each individual person, the war is going on. It's a micro and macro. Between the different planets that are helping you, and there's a war going on within each of us. That war is going on in the universe between good and evil, the demons and the devas, the rakshasas and the devas. There's a struggle going on for this universe and for the earth planet. So at the time when Krishna was present on the earth planet was threatened by these demons. In fact, generally, that is why the Lord appears. The Lord appears when the earth is threatened to save the planet and to save the devotees. Paritranaya sadunam vinasaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanataya sambhavami yuga yuga. To rescue everyone from the demons, Krishna is coming. So Arjuna, because he took up the mission, Arjuna was very dedicated to the mission. In fact, he spent many years in preparation, doing things which a devotee is not... If you look at it from the point of view of the highest path of devotion, it's perhaps what a devotee should not be doing. You know, worshipping the demigods to get some benediction of weapons. You would think that is almost a high material activity. You'd think that Arjuna was actually... Why was he worshipping the demigods to get weapons? Why is Arjuna so much considered the greatest devotee? At least, except for the residents of Vrindavan, Arjuna is the greatest devotee, the most intimate friend of the Lord. Because Arjuna's purpose in worshipping the demigods was to fulfill the mission. His purpose was very closely linked to the purpose of the Lord himself. And therefore, Arjuna was very dear to Krishna. Because whilst everybody else was trying to save themselves and become pure and go back to Godhead, Arjuna was taking on the need of the times. Arjuna was taking on the need of the times. So you have to look actually at... Sometimes, you know, it's difficult to understand who is a great devotee and who is not a great devotee. You know, because that will depend upon the time, the place, and the circumstance. For instance, now you have to look at the circumstance now. The earth planet is more threatened now than it has practically ever been, at least within 4 yugas. What's that called? Kalpa. At least within this kalpa, the earth is now more threatened than even it was at the time of the war of Mahabharata. Because although there were big demons at that time, and they had powerful weapons, at least it was organic. There was no toxic waste. There was no nuclear waste. At least they weren't spraying chemicals on the land. At least everything they did was organic, no? Those demons. Nowadays, look at what's going on. This nuclear waste, for instance. They have no solution for what to do with nuclear waste. It's so poisonous. Its half-life is 200,000 years. 200,000 years. That's half-life. That means, in other words, it really it lasts for about the length of the Kali Yuga itself. Isn't it Kali Yuga, 420,000 years or something? So the nuclear waste is lasting for the... That's not a coincidence, by the way. That's a deliberate plan. There's a huge war going on between the demons and the demigods for this Earth planet. Why has the Earth planet become so important? Because Lord Chaitanya's movement. Because in this age, you can go back to Godhead by chanting the holy name. In Kali Yuga, you can go back to Godhead by chanting the holy name. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, the Earth planet becomes very super significant. And because the Lord in this Yuga incarnates in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to give this mission, it becomes very much a focus of attention of the demons and the demigods. And therefore, the demons, they very much increase their attempt to ruin the Earth planet for the whole Kali Yuga. And that's why they invented nuclear bomb. So that would create this nuclear waste which would poison the earth for 400,000 years. Because the demons' plan is that if the demigods succeed in getting the earth, they will unleash this nuclear waste. That they have it, they deliberately have it stored because they know that they're not stupid. They know everything what's going on. They know that the demigods, through the Krishna consciousness movement, the great devotees, many of the devotees are demigods, taken birth on the earth planet to take part in this movement. And in order for this movement to flourish, we more or less have to take control of the earth. This was Prabhupada's mood, by the way. If you spent any time with Prabhupada, you picked up... Prabhupada was a fighter, a king, about to capture this planet. Prabhupada was determined to capture this planet. Because actually, until you capture the planet, we can't really fulfill our mission. Because this mission is being opposed very, very violently by the demons. And especially since Prabhupada left, they've increased all of this nuclear weight. What happened after Prabhupada left was that, you know, the Beatles, they made a movie called The Yellow Submarine. In that movie, there were some important points. It said that about the land of love was taken over by the blue meanies. Did you ever see that movie? It was a cartoon. After Prabhupada left the planet, all kinds of things started to happen, like all of this pornography and all of these, you know, hellish movies and all this stuff. TV came all over India. It all happened immediately after Prabhupada left the planet, especially the television in India. When I first came to India, nobody had a television. And if he did, it didn't work. You know, it just was, it didn't pick anything up. Therefore, you could go into any village, and if you had a movie, everybody would come out. Everybody would come out, the whole town. When I used to preach in India, all you had to do was have a movie. And then everybody would come. You just make a pandal, the whole town would come. Because nobody had a TV, and life was very simple. But after Prabhupada left, this TV started coming. And what I've seen, TV has totally changed India so much. When we were first preaching in India, you couldn't get any devotees like you. We couldn't get any Indian devotees. We couldn't get any. We had none. We had maybe Lokanath Maharaj. That was about it. Everybody else joined in the West. Gopal Krishna Maharaj and Bhakti Sruta Damodar Maharaj. They all had got some education in the West and joined in the West. And we had, I mean, maybe we had one handful of Indian devotees. That was it. You couldn't get anybody. It was just about impossible. And look at it now. I mean, it's so different. Because the material world has started to bite in India since Prabhupada's time. This TV has spread so much. All of this is a deliberate attempt by the demons to pollute the planet and to pollute the devotees. Now, don't think you're not polluted and that you're pure. None of us are pure. We're all polluted. the demons, they've done a very good job of polluting everyone. We've all been affected. Nobody's as innocent and pure as we were when Prabhupada was here. None of us. We can try to do the best we can, but if you're living in a sewer, you're going to get dirty. You know, it's very, very almost impossible to stay completely unaffected. And in fact, if you do stay completely unaffected, it may not be a good sign. Just like, you know, just imagine you're in a park and a gang of youths is raping a young girl. There's a fight going on. And over on one side, some devotees are chanting their japa. Now, the devotees, they're chanting their japa and they're very clean. They've had a nice bath. They're very pure. But in the other side, a gang is raping a young girl. So one of the devotees, he goes to try to save the girl. But as soon as he tries to save the girl, the fight gets, he gets cut, he gets dirty. He's not clean anymore. His dhoti's all over the place. In fact, he gets so dirty, you can't even tell if he's a devotee. And he's fighting. And so when the police come, they don't know the difference between the devotee and the gang. They don't know if he's also one of the gang. So they arrest everyone, including the devotee who was actually trying to save the girl. Meanwhile, the devotees who didn't go, they're still very clean and chanting and very pure. Now, who is really the most advanced devotee? Even just the attempt to try to do something about the current situation. The reason I use the example of a young girl is because the earth planet has been raped by these demons. It's absolutely been destroyed and ruined in every direction. Completely and utterly ruined. Wherever you look, wherever you go, this earth planet is, and the minds of the people has been completely poisoned. Do you know this mobile phone? How much of an effect that's having? We're all picking it up all the time. If you can see subtly, some people, they know how to pick up the energies. And these mobile phones are affecting all of us. I know because one time I stayed in a valley which had a big cliff and it couldn't pick up any mobile signals or radio or television. And I was able to concentrate on Krishna in that place more than I'd ever been able to. My mind became suddenly peaceful. You know, we're all being affected by all of this poison. It's a deliberate attempt. The demons are not stupid. And they know about the Krishna consciousness movement. They don't know exactly the importance of this movement, but they do know that the demigods are trying to capture the earth back. In fact, when Prabhupada came and the Beatles and the hippie movement, the counterculture, it was sort of a revolutionary movement. If you read Guru Das's book, you can get some idea of how it was in the 60s and 70s when Prabhupada was preaching. There was a kind of a revolution going on. It was coming through music. It was coming through Prabhupada's preaching. Everywhere where it flowered was where Prabhupada went. When Prabhupada went to New York, it happened in New York. Bob Dylan happened in New York and all that. Then Prabhupada went to San Francisco. Suddenly it happened there. And then Prabhupada came to London and it happened there. You know, and everywhere that Prabhupada went, this feeling, this coming together of like the opposition, you know, to the materialistic way of life was growing in the 60s and the 70s. So after Prabhupada left, the demons, they knew about this and they tried to stop it. That's why all of the music became very materialistic like it is now, controlled by big, big companies. No good poetry and lyrics like it used to be. All of the music and all of the films, it became very controlled by big, big companies. This is done deliberately by the demons because they were afraid that there would be a revolution against their materialistic way of life. And since that time, they've increased all this sports thing, this big sports, so that everybody's mad about sports. Because this is the best way that they can control the people. They get them completely absorbed in all these sports to distract their attention from what's really going on. To distract their attention from the fact that the whole entire planet's been poisoned. We've all become prisoners and kept in the dungeon of these few people who control, have all the wealth. Nowadays, just a few people have all the wealth. It used to be before paper money that one man could not keep too much wealth because he'd need a big, big army to protect it. Only kings could keep huge wealth because they had an army. But then some other king would come with an army and take it. So if you had too much wealth, everybody would hear about it. So in the days before paper money, you couldn't keep so much wealth. But now you can keep vast. Now one or two people are keeping all the money. People like Bill Gates and this Richard Branson Virgin guy and this Mittal. These guys have got all the money. A few people, a few billionaires, they've got all the wealth of the world. There's so much wealth. This has been concentrated in the hands of very, very few, big, big demons. Prabhupada used to say, actually, there are big demons running this planet. You can't see them, but there are only a few of them. Prabhupada said, there's just a few very big demons. One time I was walking with Prabhupada in Vrindavan, and somebody said, Prabhupada, what about these flying saucers, you know, unidentified UFOs? Is this real? And Prabhupada said, yes, this is true. They're coming. They're coming from the hellish planets. These are demons. They come to the earth planet, actually. So far, they're controlling the earth planet. So actually, the real mission of the time is how to get rid of these demons, how to stop them. Because if we don't stop them, they'll destroy it. There's very little time left. Clock is ticking. There's very little time left. Most of the great astrologers and predictors of the future think that by the year 2012, huge amount of the population of the earth will be gone. Because things are going so fast now. You know, before they were saying in 100 years, the ice will melt and the water will rise, you know, 3 meters. Now they're saying it will happen within 12 years. Now they've suddenly changed. Because they're seeing it speeding up. It's speeding up. They're saying now it won't take 100 years. It'll take only 10 to 12 years for the water, the sea level, to rise 3 meters. So in this way, so many things are happening, speeding up. Everything's speeding up now. Everything's changing so fast. In Prabhupada's time, life was still had a normal pace, you know. When I first went to Vrindavan, we used to walk up and down the road outside the temple with Prabhupada sometimes a morning walk. And you maybe would only see one car the whole morning. One car might come and you go, oh, some big man is coming to the Jaipuria guest house. That's where the big, big industrialists, only they had cars. Only the big, very big men, upper class, not middle class. Only very, very rich men had cars. And if somebody came in a car, everyone looked, oh, I wonder who that is. It must be Mr. Singhania or somebody. He's going to Jaipuria guest house. You didn't see many cars in Vrindavan. In front of the temple was just a field with cows. There was no shops, nothing. In fact, when I joined, there was no temple. There was just huts, little grass huts. I like that. When I joined, I was happy to live in a hut. For me, living in a big temple, I'm a bit afraid. I feel a little bit afraid. I might do the wrong thing. Am I doing the right thing? Am I standing in the right place? You know, especially when you've never been to the temple before. You don't know exactly how they do it because every temple is slightly different. Am I allowed to stand here? Shall I go? It's a bit fearful. It's a little bit fearful. This was not why I joined. I joined because I like the mud hut. I like the Swamiji, the few devotees, the simplest. This is there's two types of moods. You know, there's Aishvarya and there's the Vrindavan mood, which is without any Aishvarya. As soon as you have some Aishvarya, then there's fear. A little bit of fear comes in. A little bit of awe and fear. But some people, they're attracted by that. They're attracted by the Aishvarya. But in the beginning of the Krishna consciousness movement, there was no Aishvarya at all. There was no Aishvarya to be attracted by. So, you know, for me, I prefer that. I prefer that. If you offered me a room in a 5-star hotel, or a little hut, you know, in a forest with the breeze and you know, natural, I would take any day the hut. You know, than the opulence. But you know, both of these things are there in Krishna consciousness. Both of these things are there. You can have the opulence of Vaikuntha, but you can also have this. Of course, Goloka Vrindavan, there is so much opulence, but it's natural kind of opulence. Simple, simplicity. So Prabhupada actually really wanted us to make these kind of communities where you could live as devotees, very natural and simply, not depending on the demons. And this is the real need of the times, actually. We have to get independent of the demons. So how do we do that? Now, there are people who are working on that. Actually, as devotees, we're all working on that. There are different processes by which. Most important is the chanting of the holy name. This is the most important thing. It's the main weapon that we have. But Prabhupada was emphasizing we should also make communities where we can live simply and where the food that we offer to the Lord has not come from the demons. It's not been sprayed with chemicals. It's not been put in the cold storage. You know, just like in London, you can buy these mangoes from Bombay. And they come in a box and they've picked before they're ripe and they put in the cold storage. And they don't taste anywhere near as good as a mango you buy from. And if you go outside here and you see people selling mangoes, big cart with all the same, it's not as good as when you find some small guy who's got one or two mangoes and they're all different shape. Those ones you know, oh, that's come from the real village. That mango has come from the village. You know, the other guy who's got, they all look the same size. They've all got the special box. You know, that has come from the big mango plantation where they spray all the chemicals and it's all grown like a factory, like industry. So you always want to go and look for the mango, which is just come from the small village. And in this way, you know, that kind of food is much more pleasing to Krishna that has not gone through the demon's hands. So this is why Prabhupada wanted us to establish alternative way of life. Actually, we have to do this. Actually, just like in the time of the Mahabharata, this war is going on now. A huge war is going on. So the only thing that will really keep you safe from Maya is actually if you take up this mission, if you take up the mission of Prabhupada. If you take up the mission, that magnet will draw you. That alone, if you have the determination to fulfill the mission, that will save you from all the contamination that is going on around at the moment, which is very, very severe. It's very severe. India is coming under it hugely. It's increasing all the time. The whole world. Oh God, I'm going too long. Better stop. Prasadam time, right? Okay, does anybody have any comment? Any time for comments? All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai.